Today's shiur is Masechta Chulin Daf Yud Gimel, and we will begin on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph at the top line. Amalei Machshava, Great Tzolakam Boyle. As we had discussed at the end of our previous shiur, our Gemara is speaking about three different categories. At least this is the way Rashi explained the Gemara. Our Gemara is speaking about three different categories. One is a category called Machshava. The next is a category called Maisa, and then there's a category called Machshavta in the Keres Metoich Maisav. Machshava, as Rashi explains, refers to a situation where somebody, where Katan does something, he declares that this is his intention in what he is doing, but he doesn't have any accompanying act to what he's doing. And as we've learned, the machshava of a child, machshava of a katan, is not considered lahalacha, a valid machshava. On the other extreme, we have a situation of maisa, where not only does he declare what his intention is, but accompanying his declaration is a act showing that this is indeed what he's trying to do. Where again, the Gemara has been saying that even a katan has the ability to conduct something when it's a machshava and a maisa combined. Amalei, and therefore the Gemara begins, Rav Chiya says to Ami, machshavta gretza loikam boilei. In a situation as we just described where there is only machshava, there is no question to Rav Yochanan that it's not valid by a katan. Kikon boile, when does Rav Yochanan have a question? When it's a situation of machshavta in the chorus metayf maisav. We have an act, we don't have a declaration, but the act for itself points strongly in a certain direction. And the Gemara gives such an example. We know the halachi is that a korban olah is supposed to be slaughtered b'tzofen hazara, in the north side of the hazara. And here we are referring to a situation kegoyin da kaima oyla bedorim. The carbon oyla was standing in the south side of the azara. Va'as yua b'tzofen v'shachta. And the cotton moved over the carbon to the north side. Mai. What will be the halacha? Mid as yua b'tzofen v'shachta. The fact that he moved over the animal to the north side gives us a strong indication that that is intending to shecht this as a carbon oilo, and therefore it should be considered a valid carbon oilo. Idoma, it's only something that we have strong circumstantial evidence, but it could well be what happened here was the makam who devised Ramele, he didn't have enough room in the south side of the Azara, and therefore he moved the carbon over to the north side. But it's not that we have 100% evidence and 100% proof that his intent was for carbon oil. And therefore the Gemara is saying, that is the question, how do we treat a cotton act under such circumstances? So before we quote the Gemara further, learn the Gemara further, where the Gemara attempts to answer what is the halachic status in a situation by cotton of machshavta in the Keres Metoich Maisav, we need to say a word of introduction. The halacha is that in order for food to be mekabel tuma, in order for food to be susceptible to the mekabel tuma, the food has to be mukhshel lekabel tuma. It has to become susceptible to kabbalah tuma. And as we've learned many times, the way a food becomes mukhshel lekabel tuma is by it becoming wet with one of the seven liquids, water and the other liquids. And the Torah says this halacha, because the Torah says kiyite mayim al kol zera. But as the Gemara explains many times, the kri and the ksiv of that pasuk lead to very different results. The kri is yutan, kiyutan mayim al kol zera. The ksiv is kiyite. The ksiv, when it says kiyite, means when water was put specifically. And according to that, the Ksiv is teaching us that for food to become Mukhsh Lekabel Tumah, you had to have specifically put liquid on it. According to the Kri, Yutan, you don't have to put water on it. You just have to be satisfied that water with the food becoming wet. And therefore the halacha is that whether the food got wet because you put water on it specifically, or whether it became wet because you are satisfied with it being wet, it's considered mukhsh lekabel tumah. And the Tanakh. And therefore the Mishnah teaches us, hamala peirosof legag b'nei tinima. If somebody took up fruit to the roof of his home because there were insects, v'yaralein tile, and then they get wet, ein b'chliyuta. Because he, given the word, the halakha that we just quoted, this Mishnah is understandable. And here we're talking about when an adult brought the fruit up. Because he hasn't specifically made this fruit wet, nor has he shown that he's satisfied with the fact that the fruit becomes wet. And therefore, even though a cow, even though dew fell on that fruit will not yet be mukhsh lekabel tumah. However, in the skan lekach, if that was his intention, he wanted the fruit to get wet, harein b'chiyutan, because as we just explained, all we need for the fruit to become mukhsh lekabel tumah is satisfaction that it should get wet. And here, if the person wants the fruit to get wet, that will be considered enough that the food is mukhsh lekabel tumah. That's when an adult brought the fruit up to the roof. However, helam chereshoyt v'katan. If it was a chereshoyt v'katan that brought the fruit up, abish neskavul kach, even if they wanted it to get wet, that isn't enough. For as we have been learning, by a katan, a machshava alone is not enough that it should be considered a valid act. And therefore, ein b'chiyutan. The fruit will not be considered mukhsh lekabel tumah, because as we have been learning, a katan, yesh la maisa, if there's an act, and as Rashi says, an act accompanied with a declaration, that is valid even by a katan, v'ein lehem machshava. But if there's a declaration alone, as in this case, where he's saying, I'm taking the food up because I want it to get wet, that isn't enough. And as the Rishonim explained, because he really took the food up because of the insects, and therefore we don't have anything more than just the machshava alone. However, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, lo shana, even when do we say that when it was a child that took the chereshoyt the cotton, that took the fruit up, it's not makabel tumah? It's only if he didn't turn over the fruit after they got wet. Avol hipach behen, if he turned over the fruit after they got wet, that it got wet on one side, and he wanted to make sure that not only one side got moist, but the other side got moist as well, then the halach is harei hem b'chiyutan. Why? Because here, we don't only have a machshava, but here we have a machshava that keres mitach ma'isav. Why is he turning this over? He's obviously turning it over because he wants the fruit to be wet. So what we have here is as follows, as the Rishonim explained. We don't have here a maisa, because a maisa would only be if he took it up specifically and made it wet, and he declared that I want it to be wet. We don't have that. On the other hand, it's not a situation of machshava alone, because there is no declaration, but it's a machshava nekeres mitach ma'isav that it wants to be wet, by the fact that he turned it over after it got wet. And Rabbi Yochanan teaches us clearly that by cotton, machshav v'nikeres metoich ma'isav is also considered a halachically valid. So isn't that an answer to our question? Interesting to point out that the Rishonim Amidayik, that here the Gemara uses the words loshon el shlahipach behen aloshin yochid. Why? Because as we've been explaining, we're speaking about a cotton, and we're trying to understand when is a cotton's act considered halachically meaningful, and when is it not considered halakhically meaningful? But actually, as we have been learning, a katan, usually there are three individuals in the same category. Cheresh, Shoytev, and katan. And the Rishayim debate if the issue that we've been discussing in our shiurim is limited to a katan, or would apply by a cheresh and shoytev as well. And one of the rayas that they say that it's limited to a katan and not by a cheresh and shoytev is our Gemara. Because why does the Gemara use the lashon yachid? Because the Gemara is teaching us that this question is limited only to a katan. A cheresh b'shoyta certainly are not b'neideya, and they, by them, the Gemara will certainly hold that machshavta in the keres b'tayf ma'isav doesn't really have any meaning. There are other rishonim, however, disagree, and they say, as we always find in the halacha, that the status of the cheresh b'shoyta b'katan are all put into one category. And here too, whatever will be the din by a katan will be the din by a cheresh or shoyta as well. The Gemara is speaking the lashon yachid because the Gemara is speaking about one specific individual, but it's not to say that it's only the katan that will have the din. But back to the way we began the Gemara shiur today with a question: what is the halacha by machshavta in the keres mitoch ma'isof? It seems from here that Rabbi Yochanan clearly teaches us that machshavta in the keres mitoch ma'isof is considered a valid act by a katan. Says the Gemara, not necessarily. It's certain that we're learning from here that machshavta in the keres mitoch ma'isof has value by a katan. But the Gemara's question is that the raisa of the rabban? And the way most Rishonim explain the Gemara is as follows. Certainly, midrabbanon, machshavta in the keres mitoch ma'isof is considered a meaningful act by a katan when we're dealing with an issue that is a drabbanon. And as I say, most Rishonim explain that it's by every drabbanon, either whether it will cause a skula or a chumra. When we're asking in our shiur today, what is the halacha of machshavta in the keres mitoch ma'isof, that is regarding a deraisa, where by following the deraisa will end up with a kula. And just to help understand the Gemara, in this case, by following the concept that by saying machshavta in the keres mitoch ma'isof, the situation that we just learned, we're going to have a chumra, because then the food will become mukhsh l'kavul tumah. And indeed, therefore, the halacha is that when it creates a chumra by a deraisa, the halacha is we consider it machshavta in the keres mitoch ma'isof is considered meaningful, and the food will become mukhsh l'kavul tumah. But the question that we began today's shiur with was a situation where the animal was brought from the south side of the Mizbeach to the north side, south side of the Azara to the north side of the Azara. In the case where we're taking it from the south side to the north side, there, by following this approach, we're going to end up with a kula, that it's going to be considered a valid carbon. And it could be that when the result is a kula, and it's a deraisa, there we don't rely on the concept of machshavta in the keres mitoch ma'isof, and we would have to be machla. There are other mefarshim that say that the way to understand this Gemara is that even by the Rabbanon, we only rely on machshavta in the keres mitoch ma'isof when it's going to create a kula, when it's going to create a chumra, but not a kula. As I said, most Rishonim say by Drabonim we rely on Machshavta in the keres mitoch ma'isof under all circumstances. So, the Gemara did not answer the question, what is the halacha of Machshavta in the keres mitoch ma'isof? Says the Gemara, Rav Nachman Yitzchak Machshavta Hakar. Rav Nachman Yitzchak has a different version of this Gemara. Amar Rav Chiya bar Abba, Bar Rav Yochanan, Katan yesh lo ma'isa or ein lo ma'isa? Does a katan have the ability, when there's a ma'isa, with a declaration, what will be the status of that act? Omlay, the Tibayle Machshava. Why are you asking about a Maisa? What will be the halacha? What did you ask? What will be the halacha regarding the Machshava of a cotton? Mayim Mishnah Machshava the Loikum Rebayle. Why are you not asking a question by Machshava? That's not. Because the Mishnah teaches us, Ein Lan Machshava. So he says, Maisa Namay Tibayle. If it's obvious to you that a cotton doesn't have Machshava, it should be obvious to you that he does have a Maisa. Because the very same Mishnah teaches us, Yeshua Maisa, that a Katan does have a Maisa. So he answers, well, my question, where Rabbi Yochanan's question was, the Raisa or the Rabbonim. Clearly, the Mishnah teaches us that a Katan has a Maisa. The question is, when we say that a Katan has a Maisa, does that mean that it's completely valid, even Midaraisa, or only Midrabbonon, or when the Daraisa creates a Chumrah, do we say that the Maisa of a Katan is a Maisa? But when it'll be a Daraisa and create a Kula, there we will not follow the Maisa of a Katan, or Pashit. And he answered the question, that Yeshla Maisa fulfill Midaraisa, that when it comes to Maisa, where his he doesn't act with a declaration, clearly it will be considered that it's valid. Eila machshava, when there's only a machshava alone, what he does isn't even helpful midrabon. Machshavta nikeres mitoch maisav. When it's a situation machshav mitoch maisav midaraisa eloi, we don't consider it a meaningful act. Midrabonon, when it's a question of midrabonon, Machshavta nekeres mitoch maisa, we consider a valid act. Interesting to point out that the Avni Nezer discusses a question. We know that the schach of a sukkah is supposed to be put on l'shem tzeil. So what would be the halacha if a katan puts on the schach on the sukkah and he doesn't declare that he's putting it on with same sail? He doesn't declare that he's putting it on, that it should be a roof. Will it be considered a valid mice? Will it be considered a valid sukkah or not? Because on one hand, it's clearly a situation, a machshavta nikeres mitoch maisav. It seems that he's putting it on because he wants to show that because he wants it to be a kosher sukkah. But on the other hand, it's only an act that's not coupled with a declaration, and the question is it going to be considered valid? So the Avni Nezer says, the right thing to do is, if somebody wants to have a child be the one to put the schach on the sukkah, is that the adult should have a machshava that he's putting the schach is being put on with shem tzeil. And he says, in such a case, the machshava of the adult coupled with the mice of the cotton, they could combine and it'll be a kosher sukkah. There's also an interesting shaila regarding the following issue. The Shulchan Aruch says that women may be the ones that tie the tzitzis on a beged of dal knafas. The Ramah says that l'chatchila we should not have women tying the tzitzis onto the beged, because since women are not mechuyiv in the mitzvah of tzitzis, they should be the ones putting the tzitzis on the beged. It seems that the Ramah is lenient regarding the katan. And there's a machloikis apaiskim, what is indeed the halacha by a katan. Some paiskim say that a katan should not be the one putting on the tzitzis. Because just like we said, that according, just like the Ramah teaches us, that a woman is not the one that puts on the tzitzis, so too, because she's not mechuyiv in the mitzvah tzitzis, ketanim, who are also not mechuyiv in this mitzvah, should not be those putting the tzitzis on the beged. The other paiskim say that no, since a katan will eventually be mechuyiv in the mitzvah tzitzis, even though right now he's not mechuyiv, that is enough that he can be the one to put the tzitzis on the beged. However, points out the Bir Halacha, that even if a katan can't be the one to put the tzitzis on the beged, that's only on the beged of a gadol. It says the Bialacha, if a katan puts on tzitzis on the beged that he's going to be wearing, that's fine. But the issue that's discussed amongst the paiskim is what will be a halacha. The Bialacha already discussed this. What will be the halacha of a katan put on tzitzis on a beged, and then he became bar mitzvah? Can he continue wearing those tzitzis, or should he get another pair of tzitzis because the tzitzis that he's wearing have had the tzitzis put on by a katan? So the Bi'ah Halacha seems to be lenient. Other Paiskim seem to be lenient. Other Paiskim are machmer. They say now that he's a gadol, he shouldn't be wearing tzitzis that were put on by a katan. How do we understand the opinion of so all these Paiskim that are lenient? Because certainly when the tzitzis are being put on by a katan, it's at least in the category of machshafta and nikaris mitaych ma'isof. And therefore, as our Gemara taught us, that machshafta and nikaris mitaych ma'isof may be considered a valid act by a katan. Furthermore, the Shem Shmuel says from our Gemara we see what happens when a katan becomes bar mitzvah. In our Gemara we're learning that as long as he's a katan, his machshava is not considered a valid machshava. And when he becomes bar mitzvah, we know his machshava is considered a valid machshava. Apparently, says the Shem Shmuel, that when a katan becomes bar mitzvah, he gets a new neshama, a new mayach, a new machshava, is a new person. Ask the Gemara, bar minei Shmuel Rafuna, menayim misasik v'kachim shu pasul. How do we know if somebody is only misasik v'kachim that is considered pasul? And here we have machloikis v'shoinim. What is the definition of misasik v'kachim? Rashi explains that it's referring to a situation where the person had no intention to doing an act of shechita at all. Very similar to the case that we learned at the end of the previous year, where the person did an act of shechita without any intention, where he just threw the knife and the animals got killed with a proper shechita. But if there was a machshava to do a shechita, according to Rashi, that would not be in the category of misasik. Tosfos doesn't agree with Rashi. Firstly, Tosfos seems to say that halacha, that's adequate, only goes according to the opinion of Rav Nosson. Rabbanim disagree. And as we also discussed, we're not quite sure how lenient Rav Nosson is. And therefore, Tosfos has two different ways of understanding what is considered misasik b'kachim. One is, when a person shechted, he intended to cut the simonim of the animal, but he didn't intend to do it l'shem shechita. That's one pshat that Tosfos suggests. Or another pshat that Tosfos suggests is that he thought that this animal, which is really kachim, were chulin. How do we know that is disqualified by kachim? Shnam of a shachar es ben habakar. Shtei shechit l'shem ben bakar. It has to have a lishma. Amalei, to which Shmuel says to Rav Huna, Zubi yedenu, we were well aware of this. La'akim inayim, as we've learned many times, by kachim, the rule is, shana lava kasav l'akiv, that only if the Torah repeats the halacha two times is it absolutely essential. And therefore the Gemara wants to know is where does the Torah teach us this then a second time? So he answers, Tamaloimer, L'ritzoichem tzvuchu, L'datem tzvuchu, the Torah is teaching us that it has to be with das. So Rabbi Kiva Eger asks that the Gemara in Masech B'chayrus teaches us that the way we know that a cherish v'shaita are disqualified from doing the avoida is because the Torah is the enish shava b'zar shel Aaron. They're not the same as all the other descendants of Aaron. So asks Rabbi Kiva Eger, why does the Gemara have to use that limud in Masech B'chayrus? He should have said, well, we're learning in our Gemara that they don't have das. So some explain that this din, the Al Gemara, is limited strictly to Shechita. The Gemara over there is not speaking only about Shechita, and therefore the Gemara wants to know how do we know, the Gemara comes with a different limit, how we know that they're disqualified from that Vada. Rabbi Chaim Briska, it's very similar, says that there are certain avoiders that the Torah requires be done l'shma, the avoidance of the kabbonis. However, how do we know that even an avoida where the Torah does not require that it be done l'shma? An example he gives is hatavas haneiros, cleaning out the menorah. Where there is no requirement that it be done l'shma? So based on the limit of our Gemara, the katan would not be disqualified. So that's why the Gemara Masech B'chayrus has to come with another limit. How we know that the avoider of a chereshayt v'katan is disqualified. Continues the Mishnah. Shechitas ha'v'chavim, the shechita of an akum is nevela, and we know that a nevela is matama b'masa. There's a machlokes rishonim why the shechita of an akum is nevela. Many rishonim have the opinion that only someone who is obligated to only eat properly slaughtered meat can be a qualified shechit. And since obviously akum do not have this halacha, therefore akum are excluded from being shaychtim. The Rambam seems to have a different approach. The Rambam seems to say, because by an akum we're concerned that he's shechting the animal l'shem avod zara, and as we're going to learn soon in the Gemara, an animal that's slaughtered l'shem avod zara certainly is certainly not considered kosher. It's even tamei, and therefore that's why the shechita of an akum is possible. The Mepharshim point out that according to the explanation of the Rambam, when, as we're going to learn in our shiur today, when we live in a time where akum are not oydei avodah zarah, the shechita of an akum would not be disqualified midaraisa; it would only be disqualified midrabbanan, because there is no concern b'zman hazeh, for example, that the akum is slaughtering the animal l'shem avodah zarah. But now the question is, according to the other opinion that we quoted, the opinion of the Rishonim, that the reason an Akum can't shecht is because he's not in the parasha of eating only kosher meat. So the question is, we've been learning in our Masechta constantly that the Chereshayit of a cotton under certain circumstances could shecht. We learned in the first Mishnah when they're being supervised and many other such examples where Chereshayit v'katan shechted. But now the question is, ask the Mepharshim, that a Chereshayit v'katan are part of mitzvahs. And if a Chereshayit v'katan are part of mitzvahs, they should be in the same category as an Akum. Now we're learning that an Akum doesn't shecht because he's not Chayit v'shechita. So I saw many answers. One answer that I saw is that since the katan, the Akum, will never be mechuyiv b'mitzvahs. The katan, on the other hand, when he becomes an adult, will be mechuyiv b'mitzvahs. And the same thing in Chereshayta, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help, they have refu shlema, will be mechuyiv b'mitzvahs. So therefore, they're not considered excluded from the parish of Shechita. Another explanation that I saw that the Achronim suggest is that the halacha is also lispus loy b'yadayim. And even though the cotton is not mechuyiv b'mitzvahs, an adult may not intentionally serve non-kosher meat to a chereshayit of a cotton. And therefore, they are considered somewhat connected to the mitzvah of shechita. There is no such halacha by an akum, and therefore a cotton is considered in the parasha of shechita. Another teretz that I saw, and as we've mentioned many times, actually, shechita does not only accomplish that the meat may be eaten. Shechita also accomplishes that the meat is not tummy. There's a no tumas nevela. And certainly, a chereshayit of a cotton are in the parasha of tumma. That means if a cotton eats something that touches something that's tummy, he becomes tummy. So a chereshayit of a cotton do have connection to the parasha of shechita, and akum does not. So makes the Gemara the point that when an akum shechts a behema, nevela in, it's considered like a nevela. However, isa hanoloi, it's not considered os b'hano. Avodah zara we know is os b'hano. We're not concerned that this should be considered in that category. Why, says our Gemara? Man tana, amr chiba Rabbi Abba, amr Rabbi Yochanan, d'loik Rabbi Elazar. Our Mishnah is obviously not following the opinion of Rabbi Elazar. Dear Rabbi Elazar's opinion is amistamach shevus avodas kachavim. We have to be concerned that Avodah Goy shechts the Shem Avodah Zorah, and it will be brought the Shem Avodah Zorah, not only is it Matameh, but it's also Bahana. Rav Ami Amar Hachik Tami. Rav Ami says this the way to understand the Mishnah. And as the Rishonim point out, it's not that Rav Ami is disagreeing with Rav Chiya. What Rav Ami is saying, that what Rav Chiya is saying is obvious. There must be another, deeper diyuk to make in our Mishnah. What is the diyuk? That the shechitas oved kachavim, when you have an oved kachavim Then, when he shechts, what he shechts is considered an avela. Hadamin, if somebody is in the category of a min, then the halacha is that what he shechts is considered an avodas kechavim, it's considered to be like an avodah zarah, and it's also bahano. Who is a min? Because we're going to be discussing min in our shir extensively. Machlokes rishonim. Some say a min is someone who's oduk b'avodah zarah, somebody who's very connected to his avodah zarah. Others say a min is somebody who's a koimer l'avodah zarah, somebody who is a priest for avodah zarah. Tanina l'hod tana rabbonim, says the Gemara, our Braisa, our Mishnah therefore is teaching us what we learned in the following Braisa. The Braisa teaches us Shchitas min l'avodah kechavim. The Shchita of a min is considered avodah zarah. Piton is past kuti. The Gemara Masechta Avodah Zarah teaches us that the bread of the Akum, Pas Akum, is also. However, we know that there are two types of Pas Akum. There's Pas Akum, which a guy bakes privately in his home, and there's Pas Palter, bread baked commercially. Pas Akum, that's baked in the home, is also. Pas Palter is not also. Me'ikar Hadin. The pas of a kuti, we know the kutim, as we discussed many times, even in this Masechta, are the nation that came to inhabit the land of Eretz Yisrael, and they became gerim because of the fear of the lions that were attacking them. And there's always a question in Shas, are they considered Jews, gerim emes, gerim arayis? Our Gemara clearly is considering them not Jewish. And as the Rishonim explain, the pas of a kuti is treated more strictly than the pas of a regular akum. The Rishonim offered two reasons as to why. One is, because why did Chazal make a gzeira that we should not eat the bread of akum? Because Chazal wanted to separate us from the akum. We shouldn't intermarry. We shouldn't come to be together with them. So the kutim, who, as we just described, lived amongst us. Since they lived amongst us, there was a greater concern not to become intermingled with them. And therefore, not only the pas of they bake privately of a kuti is asur, but even the pas palter of a kuti is asur. Another explanation that I saw the Rishonim suggest is as follows. Originally, as I said, Chazal said that all bread of Akum are asur. But then Chazal saw there was a gzeirah, she'ein rov et tzibi chayim la'amaboy. It was a rule that most people cannot follow. And therefore they relaxed the rule and said that only bed break privately is also, not bed break commercially. But they only relaxed it by all goyim. Regarding the kutim, they saw that they could continue the original gzeirah. And since they could continue the original gzeirah, the pas of kutim, even the pas palter of kutim, remained asur, and our Bryce is teaching us that the pas of a min is the same. Yein o yein nesach, and again, as the Rishonim explained, wine that, as the Gemara teaches us in Masechta Avodah Zarah, wine that's bought from an akum, we normally need not be concerned that it was brought with shame Avodah Zarah. It's asur mit rabbanon because of stam yeinon. But the bread, but the wine of somebody who's a min, is considered full-fledged yayin nesach. Svarov Sifrei Kusmi. Even if they wrote Sifrei HaKadosh with the shame Hashem, those Svarim should be burnt. Why? So Rishonim offer two reasons. One reason is because even if they wrote the shame Hashem, they certainly did not write the shame Hashem L'shma. And the halach is that the shame Hashem only has a Kedusha if it's written L'shma. Since this wasn't written L'shma, it doesn't have a Kedusha. Another pshat is that since, as we've been learning, they are so attached to their Avodah Zarah, when they write the Shem Hashem, they don't have in mind Hashem, they really have in mind their Avodah Zarah, and therefore those Svarim should be burned. Peroisov, if we buy produce from them, we are certain that that produce is Tevel. And even Amin a Yisrael, therefore, we're certain it's not just the Mai, but it's Tevel. The Yeshomer, af, We have to be concerned that his wife has adulterous relationships. The Tanakhama, but the Tanakhama who doesn't have that concern, says, Ishtoli Mafka. As improper his behavior is, he still doesn't act this way with his wife. So the Mefarshim ask, we just learned this week that we know the halacha is Roy Be'ilos Achar Habal, that we generally assume that a wife became pregnant from a husband. So why does the Tanakhama hold, what does the Yesh Anim hold, the bottom Mamzerim? Explain the Mefarshim. That Roy that we've learned, that Roy Be'ilos Achar Habal, is all based on the principle that a husband and wife are typically faithful to each other. But if we know that their behavior is an immoral behavior and they're not faithful to each other, then we don't have a roiv of be'ilos achar habal, and we therefore have to consider b'anam amzayim. Omamar, so our Mishnah taught us that the shechitas over kachavim is an avail. Ask the Gemara, but what not be concerned? Shema minhu, that perhaps this akum is a min, and we just finished saying that the shechita of a min is not just nevela, but it's considered like avodah zara, and it's osa b'hanah. Answers the Gemara, Amar Nachman, Amar Rav Avuha, ein minim b'avodas b'chavim. There are no minim b'ari akum. Ask the Gemara. That means the Gemara seems to be saying we're more concerned by minim by Jews than by akum. Ask the Gemara for kachazina the ikum. We clearly see that there are minim amongst the akum. Answers the Gemara, what it means to say is ein roi oidik chav minim. Most oidik chavim are not minim. And in fact, that explains the Sharm Tzion Ba'alocha. We know that the first Mishnah Masechta Avodah Zarah says that we're not supposed to do business with akum on their holiday or around their holiday, and we know that that isn't our custom. Why? Says the Sharm Tzion Ba'alocha, because our Gemara teaches us ein minim. It's only Akum who are Minim where Chazal were concerned about doing business with them around the holidays. Since Al Gemara teaches us that usually they're not Minim, we need not be concerned. Because says the Gemara, Saval Kihad Amr Akiva Abba Amr Yechran, Nachrim Shem Chutzlaritz, Labai Dukham Heim. The Nachrim and Chutzlaritz don't really worship the Avai Dazara, Ella Minig Avaseyan Biyadayim. The only reason that they worship Avodah Zarah is because they're following their customs that they had from before. And as the Rishonim point out, not once we've established that the Minim, the Avodah Chavim, and Chutz Laretz are only worshipping Avodah Zarah because it's just keeping up a previous custom. Similarly, even the Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael, we need not be concerned, are really mean. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Yosef ben Yuni, Amar Rav Nachman, Ein Minim B'Avodas Kechavim. So as Rashi explains, that what our Gemara is coming to teach us, that different than the previous Gemara. The Gemara before said, Ein Minim B'Avodas Kechavim meant to say, that the akum, that most akum are not considered minim. Our Gemara has come to teach us that even the minim, even if you find an akum who is a min, we won't treat him as a min. Ask the Gemara, Lamai, what does Rav Yosef ben Yuni Amar Rav Nachman mean with this statement? Ilem l'shchita, that if a min akum shechts, we're not concerned that's the shame of the Zara. Ask the Gemara. Shachta shchitas min di Yisrael. If you're Rechman, it's not have Yisrael as a min. We're saying it's osur dav kachavim meboye. Is there a question by an oid kachavim who's a min? If the shchita of a Yisrael who's a min would treat so seriously, certainly the shchita of a akum who's a min should be treated that way. And Tosfos in Masechet Horius qualifies the Gemara as follows. If you have a person who's Oibir Avodah Zarah, and we don't know if he's a min or not, we're going to be more concerned of Yisrael, Rachman Tzlan, who's Oibir Avodah Zarah, is a min, more than an Akum. Why? The explanation is very simple. Akum, as we just finished explaining, is only worshipping Avodah Zarah because he's following the customs of his forefathers. Yisrael, who's worshipping Avodah Zarah, is obviously not following the custom of his forefathers. His forefathers, Baruch Hashem, weren't Avodah Zarah. And therefore, when we see Rechman Tzlan and Yisrael worshipping Avodah Zarah, there's a greater concern that he's a min. However, when we have two individuals, a min Yisrael and a min Akum, the halacha is much stricter with a min Akum than it is with a min Yisrael. Ela Meridim. Again, the halacha is the Meridim that the Mishnah teaches us that if he's a min, we should push into a pit. Again, ask the Gemara. If a Yisrael is a min, has the halacha of Meridim, certainly the Chavim Medayim. As the Rambam points out, there certainly is no halacha of Meridim Bizman Hazer. The Rambam says, because Bizman Hazer, an Akum who's a min, is certainly only doing it because it's what is the custom. So even if he's very attached to his Avodah Zarah, we're assuming it's only because, and it's the same unfortunately by Yisrael according to Rambam, he's a victim of the society and the environment in which he lives in, and therefore the halacha of Meridim doesn't apply. Chazanish takes a different approach. The Chazanish approach is that only in a time where the Yad Hashem and the Hashgacha of Hashem was so clear, that's when we have the halacha of Meridim. Unfortunately, in a time like the time that we live now, where it's a time of Golus and the Hashgacha of Hashem is not so visible to us, this halacha doesn't apply. So the Gemara is regarding the following halacha. Amar of Akka bar Chumah. So again, what do we mean when we say Amin and Ba'umas of Kachavim? The Kabbalah and Karbon. Regarding the halacha of accepting a carbon. For as we've learned, the Tanya, Odom ki Yaakov mikem carbon, v'loi kochem. We don't accept a carbon from anyone. V'haitzi, from everyone. V'haitzi is a mumah. That we don't, as we learned earlier in Amasach, accept kabonis from Jewish mumah. Michem, however, continues the Brisa to teach us, b'chem chalakti, v'loi b'avt kochem. Only by Jews is there such a distinction, not by Akum. So if Farshim ask, if so, Rav Yosef ben Yumi or Rav Nachman has come to teach us what is explicit in a Braisa, answer the Farshim, and this is relevant for throughout Shas, that every Amoyer was not obligated to know every Braisa. He was obligated to know the Mishnayis, but he wasn't obligated to know the Braisas. And therefore, even though what we're learning, what he's teaching us, is a Braisa, that doesn't mean that he shouldn't have taught it us. Remind. Ask the Gemara who says that that's what the pasuk is teaching us. Dilma hafikamer, maybe what the pasuk is teaching us. Mishrael tzedikim mekabel, from Mishrael who act properly take kavanas. Mishoyi, from those Jews that don't act properly loit the kabel. Out of the kavim by akum klal klaloi, don't take kavanas ever. Answers the Gemara, the Tanya lois akadatos. That can't be what the pasuk means to say. The Tanya ish. Matam alayna ish ish. The rabbis as I've decovered to teach us the akum noidrim in the darm in Dov's Yisrael. The Kabrin Kabonis like Yisrael. Now Farshim asks a question that the obligation to fulfill one nether and the dova is not amongst the Zion mitzvahs b'nei noyach. So why is the halacha asked the Avnei Meluim that if akum is menader or menader v'karbin, he has to fulfill his obligation. It's not one of the Zayin mitzvahs b'nei noyach. Answer Davni Malum. Since we have a halacha, amirasa legevoya k'misirasa lehegit, that as soon as one makes an obligation to Hegdish, it's considered as if he completed the transaction. And certainly Akum are also obligated to follow the rules of business, that's called dinan. Donating a carbon is as if it's already completely given. We learned in the Mishnah that when an Akum shechts, it's a nevela, and therefore it's matam b'masa. Ask the Gemara, obviously, even in the Veilihi, we know that a Nevela is Matamba B'masa. Answers the Gemara, Amar Rava Hachatzani. This is what the Mishnah is teaching us. Zum Matamba B'asa. This carbon is Matamba B'masa. V'yesh L'cha Acheres, but there's another case, Shmatama Fil B'oil, that there's even Tumas oil. Beza, Zuta Kuruvus Avodz Kachavim, that when it's brought to Avodz Zara, and that it follows the opinion of Yehuda ben Beseira, that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira says that Avodah Zarah has the same tumah like tumas mess, and just like by tumas mess, there's a tumas oil, so too by a behemah that was brought to Avodah Zarah, there will be a tumas oil. Ikedamri, Amar Rav Hachatan, Zu Metamba Masa, the way to understand the Mishnah is that in the veil of Metamba Masa, V'yesh L'Cherashi Kazu, and there's another carbon that will have the same din. Shematamba Masa, that only has Tumas Masa, Vein Matamba Tumba Oil, doesn't have Tumas Oil, Vezazu, Takruvas Avetz Gachavim, the Lord could be the Mimsaver. This Tana obviously holds that we don't compare Takruvas Avetz Zaru to a mace, and therefore it only has a din of Tumas Masa, like in a Vela, but not a Tumas Oil. The Tanya, what is this based on? Rav Yehuda ben Beseira Oymer, Menayim Takruvas Avetz Gachavim, Shematam Ba'oil, Shnam V'yitzom D'Luvah For'or, V'yoich L'Zivcha Meisim, says Rav Yehuda ben Beseira, Ma Meis Matam Ba'oil, after Takruvas Avetz Gachavim Matam Ba'oil, the Rabbanon obviously disagree, and they hold that that's not what the Pasuk is coming to teach us, that we should consider Takruvas Avetz Zara Tumas Nes. Says the Mishnah Shachet B'Layla, if the Somri Shechts by night, the Kenes Sumish Shachet, or of a suma shechted, shchitasik shera, the shchita is kosher. So Mefarshim asked, how could the shchita of a suma be kosher if we learned early in our shir that somebody who's not obligated in hilchas shchita is not allowed to be a shaychet? That's why we said an akum is excluded. And the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda is that a suma is potter mikol hamitzvos. So how come the shechita of a suma is kosher? So some explain that a suma is, that our Mishnah is obviously not following the opinion of Yehuda that says a suma is part of kol mitzvos. Rekiva Eger says that when Yehuda says a suma is potter mikol mitzvos, it means he's part from mitzvos asay, but he's obviously chayiv in the mitzvos lois asay. And shechita is a lav avo mechlal asay, because a Jew may not eat non-properly slaughtered meat. And that's a din that applies to suma as well. And since it applies to a suma, that's why a suma could be a shaychet. Hashaychet, says our Gemara, Mishnah using the word hashaychet, seems to be teaching us the Yevet in v'chatchil oloi, that such a shechita that's described in our Mishnah is only kosher by the Yevet. Seemingly, our Mishnah is teaching us the one l'chatchila should not shech by night. V'mini, asked the Gemara, doesn't the Brisa say, lo'olam shechta ben b'yoyim ben b'layla ben b'resh agag ben b'resh asfina, that you could shech l'chatchila by night? Amra papa, b'shavuka kenegdo. It's talking when it's at night, but it's illuminated. If it's illuminated, or some place can say, or if there's a strong moon light, then you could shech by night. Otherwise, l'chatchila one should not shech by night. Interesting to point out, Beshlana Kluger in the Shaul's Chuvus Tov Tavadas says l'chatchila we should not take a shaychit someone who wears eyeglasses, because again, it's like shaychit b'layla. Most paiskim, the Masham, and all other paiskim disagree and say that a shaychit who's wearing eyeglasses and sees well once he's wearing his eyeglasses, it's kosher to be a shaykh of the Chatchila. Arav Ashi, Dekanami, the Tani Hassam, Dumi the Yoin. There, the Braisa compares Yoin, Laila to Yoin. Vahacha, our Braisa compares it to Suma. Why? Because Yoin, the Laila, is talking about Laila that's similar today, where it's completely illuminated, and therefore you could check the Chatchila by night. Our Mishnah is referring to a situation where it's night and it's dark, and since it's dark, l'chatchila one should not shecht in the dark. Shema mina. Why l'chatchila should one not shecht in the dark? Machlokes Rishonim. Rashi explains because the halacha is that you're supposed to, as we learned earlier in our perek, you're supposed to check the simonim right after the shechita. And since when it's dark, you can't check the simonim immediately, it's dark, you're going to have to wait till the morning, and we're concerned you may not end up checking those simonim. Therefore, you shouldn't check l'chatchila by night. The Rabbi says that when it's dark, a person may do a chalada or a drusa, and since he doesn't really clearly see what he's doing, we have to be concerned that he's doing it and won't notice what he's doing. And therefore, when it's dark, one should not check l'chatchila.